millions of people have so far been displaced while they have no shelter. The world must pay attention to Afghanistan now.
Currently, 18 out of 34 provinces of Afghanistan are the scene of fierce battles between the Taliban and Afghan troops. The Taliban militants have captured four provincial capitals in northern Afghanistan since Sunday. The Afghan president recently said the situation will change in favor of Afghan national security and defense forces in 6 months. This is while Taliban says it's not willing to approve even a ceasefire. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
The Prisoners Committee for the National and Islamic Forces in the Gaza Strip is holding a series of events, including an international campaign demanding an end to the illegal policy of administrative detention practiced against Palestinians in Israeli jails. The protest was held in front of the headquarters of the International Committee of the Red Cross that came along with a conference in the West Bank.
Detainees under the administrative detention don't have any charge and they don't know why they are arrested. They can't have a lawyer and they don't know when they are going to leave the jails. There are detainees who spent more than 10 years with no legal charge. Most administrative detainees are on a hunger strike defending their right to freedom. We are holding a campaign to tell the detainees that they are not alone.
The illegal administrative detention policy allows the Israeli regime to extend the detention of a prisoner without charge or trial and prevents them from having a lawyer.
Today, Palestinians are protesting here against inhumane Israeli policy of administrative detention practiced against our people with no charge. Supporting the Palestinian detainees and their issue is a priority for us. We call on all human groups to stand by the detainees and bring an end to Israel's administrative detention.
Since the beginning of August, 17 Palestinian detainees have begun a hunger strike to protest against their administrative detention. Palestinians have called on the international community to break its silence over the prisoners' issue and stop the illegal policy to save the lives of Palestinian prisoners.
The administrative detention policy totally contradicts international law and violates human rights. I personally was suffering from this illegal policy for 3 years inside Israeli jails, and I can tell you the tragedy administrative detainees live with. Being arrested with no charge and having no court for an unknown number of years are what administrative detainees suffer from. Unfortunately, the human rights groups and the international community are aware of this tragedy, but don't move a stone.
There are almost 5,000 Palestinian detainees in Israeli jails, including women and children, as well as administrative detainees, who are arrested with no charge amid the silence of the international community. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
Under the title, The Blockade and Raising Customs Tariffs is an American Crime, thousands of Yemenis filled the streets of the capital Sana'a to stand against the recent decision of the former President Tehadi government to raise the customs tariff by 100% on the imports to Aden Port amid the continued closure of Hodeida Port by Saudi Arabia.
Yemenis came out to the streets today to tell the whole world that raising the customs tariffs and the financial and economic siege on Yemen must come to an end. Yemenis have been steadfast for years and will prove to the world that Yemen is the graveyard of invaders militarily and economically.
Protesters said the new tariff rate will negatively affect the prices of basic commodities including food and medicine amid the already dire humanitarian situation due to the ongoing Saudi war and siege.
Raising the prices of customs tariffs will negatively affect the prices of foodstuffs and all other basic commodities. And this is unacceptable. We are living the worst humanitarian crisis in the world, and this decision will constitute an additional crisis in light of what we have been experiencing for 7 years.
They have also said the US and the Saudi led coalition imposed this new tariff rate to force Yemenis to surrender after they have failed in the military field.
The aim of the decision to raise the tariff is to force the Yemenis to surrender. But our principles and morals reject this, and we will continue our steadfastness until we achieve victory. The enemies have failed to defeat us through creating difficult economic situation for us.
Yemen is on the brink of famine and facing the world's worst humanitarian crisis, according to the United Nations, since the Saudi-led coalition backed by Washington launched a devastating war on the war-ravaged nation at the beginning of 2015.
People here say that Washington is backing the Saudi siege, which is threatening the lives of millions of Yemenis, including children. They say the continued apathy of the international community is yet another proof of the U.S. participation in the brutal war on their country. Abdulatif Roshali, Sana.
The South Korean government extended its highest level of social distancing for two more weeks as new cases of COVID-19 drag on at over 1,500 per day, the most since the beginning of the pandemic in early 2020.
The speed of the ongoing outbreak is slowing, but the size of the outbreak is still big, and this shows it's unclear if the outbreak will display a downward trajectory soon. The movement of people is not decreasing as much as desired, and the Delta variant cases continue to increase.
The more contagious Delta variant of the virus is responsible for more than half of the new cases. Private gatherings of more than two people after 6 p.m. are banned, and nightlife is largely shut down.
The South Korean government had just announced the relaxation of social distancing guidelines when the fourth wave struck here in early July, forcing officials to reverse course. And pressure now is mounting for relief. Churches have been critical over restrictions on the number of people that can attend services, and unions have held large street rallies challenging the guidelines.
Although most people observe government advisories, frustration is growing.
The level of social distancing has been increased and decreased and increased again. Personally, I think that social distancing has no point because it's nonsense. We are now in level 4 of social distancing, but the number of new cases has not decreased.
Officials say measures will be relaxed when case numbers fall. South Korea has so far vaccinated about 15% of the population, with the government now considering booster shots for those most vulnerable. Frank Smith, Seoul.
The Secretary General of Lebanon's resistance movement, Hezbollah, said that the recent Israeli attack was a very dangerous development, which has not occurred in the last 15 years, stressing that the resistance needed to respond swiftly.
Our response was linked directly to the two incidents of Israeli Air Force attacks, which targeted Lebanese territory for the first time in 15 years. And our response had very clear tools and objectives. We calculated our moves very precisely. Our enemy and our friends said this. They said open territory. They did not target civilians. So we also targeted open areas with no civilians. But we had many options. We could hit open areas in Sheba Farms, in northern occupied Palestine, or the occupied Golan Heights.
Said Hassan Nasrallah made the remarks in a televised speech to commemorate the 15th anniversary of the 2006 war. He said that Israel deliberately targeted open areas in the middle of the night in order to terrorize civilians, and presumed that the resistance would not respond because of the various domestic problems inside Lebanon. Said Nasrallah stressed that the main deterrence for Israel is the capabilities of the resistance.
The enemy today is more fearful than any time in the past because of the developments in Palestine and the region and the transformations in the region and the ascending strength of the resistance and because of the deep internal divisions and the mutual hatred between the occupying Zionist groups. Facing their internal issues and the strengthening of the resistance, everyone in the Zionist entity is talking about an existential threat.
Experts believe the military potential of Hezbollah has created a balance of deterrence, or Israel is incapable of even starting a war.
Israel wants Hezbollah to start the war. The situation will be different. Hezbollah is aware of this, will not Israel let him go to war, anytime, Israel wanted.
The leader of Lebanon's resistance noted that in any future confrontation, the Israeli military will disintegrate completely and would be heavily defeated.
The 2006 war had settled a certain status quo, which remains until today, with a new regional equation, which comprises all the resistance groups in the region. Any miscalculation by the Israelis could be detrimental for Israel. Mariam Saleh, Beirut.
Visiting the famous Eiffel Tower in Paris has become more complicated than before. Now, people have to show an electronic document that proves that they are vaccinated twice. If not, they need to show a negative PCR test. However, most of the visitors do not consider this procedure as a problem.
It's a good opportunity to show that you're vaccinated. For me, this is perfect. This way, we are all sure that we are vaccinated.
I'm fine with it. I mean, if it lets us do things like this, then why not? To go back to some kind of normal, being able to spend time with our family, go on vacation, it's nice.
The same procedure is used to visit public places like the Louvre Museum. Rows are longer than usual because people have to show their pass.
I'm rather in favor of the health pass. If it is to protect everyone and to prevent the virus from spreading, that's better for everybody.
The French Parliament and Senate have voted this new law, and earlier this week, the Constitutional Council has approved the law text. The health pass will now be extended also to restaurants and trains. But protesters continue taking the streets. They were again tens of thousands in France and at least 2,000 in Paris. Why? Jerome Rodriguez, who lost his eye in a previous protest, organized this march. He explains that the problem is not the vaccination, but the limitation of liberties.
We are here to protest against the violation and decline of liberties in France. We are not here against the vaccines. The health pass is just one extra restrictive law after another. The first restrictive law was against the yellow vests, the second one about global security, and now the third with the health pass. Macron should take care of the poor people, not only of the rich companies who earned a lot of money during this COVID crisis.
The protesters are especially targeting the French government that is using force rather than persuasion to obtain a double vaccination of a large majority of the French. The reason is medical. Today, most of the people who arrive in hospitals with severe symptoms of the COVID-19 virus are not vaccinated. Most of the people who transmit the virus are not vaccinated either. Despite ongoing protests against the mandatory health pass, the majority of the French is bowing more and more to the medical evidence. Today, vaccination is the only efficient way to hold back the coronavirus. Chris Den Hunt, Paris.
This is Pinbaldak, a Kiefgan border crossing in southwest of Pakistan. North Alban have shut it down, demanding Pakistan a visa-free movement of Afghan citizens. The complete closure of the border has suspended transportation of edible items and movement of thousands of people from both sides. The Taliban recaptured most of the border crossing with the neighboring countries of Afghanistan in an attempt to lay down a besiege of President Ashraf Ghani's beleaguered government in capital Kabul. Islamabad has completed 90% of wide fence of nearly 2,700 kilometer long porous border with Afghanistan to contain the movement of terrorists sneaking into Pakistan to carry out terrorist attacks. If visa restriction is removed, Islamabad fears there would be more infiltration of terrorists into Pakistan. Therefore, the government here is unlikely to concede to the Taliban demand of a visa-free movement of Afghan citizens.
It's not a legitimate government who can come up with a legitimate demand or where it can ask a relationship which is based state to state. It has to legitimize itself. It has to bring itself to an acceptable and internationally recognized position.
The Taliban claim to have recaptured 85% of Afghan territory, controlling over 260 districts, most of which after the withdrawal of US-led NATO forces. The clashes between the Taliban fighters and Afghan National Army have made thousands of families homeless, and many of them were caught in the crossfire, particularly in the southern parts of Afghanistan. The UN has warned an unfolding humanitarian crisis in Afghanistan.
The provincial capitals of Kandahar, Herat, and Lashkar Gah
in particular, have come under significant pressure. This is a clear attempt by the Taliban to seize urban centers with the force of arms.
The ongoing talks between Taliban and President Ashraf Ghani's government in Doha have so far failed to take off. Both sides remain glued to their respective demands, which has heightened the fear of Taliban overtaking the rest of Afghanistan in near future. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
The Supplication on Thursdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who has taken away the shadowy night by His power and brought the sight-giving day through His mercy. He has clothed me in its brightness and given me its favor. O Allah, just as Thou hast spared me for this day, so also spare me for its likes. Bless the Prophet Muhammad and his household, and torment me not in it and in other nights and days by allowing me to commit unlawful acts and to clothe myself in sins. Provide me with its good, the good of all within it, and the good of everything after it, and turn away from me its evil, the evil of all within it, and the evil of everything after it. O Allah, by the protective compact of Islam, I seek mediation with Thee, and by the inviolability of the Quran, I rely upon Thee. By Muhammad, the Chosen, Allah bless him and his household, I seek intercession with Thee. So recognize my protective compact, by which I hope my need will be granted. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, decree for me on Thursday five things, which none embraces but Thy generosity, and none supports but Thy favors. Health through which I may have the strength to obey Thee. Worship by which I may deserve Thy plentiful reward. Plenty in my state through lawful provision. And that Thou makest me secure in the places of fear through Thy security. And placest me in Thy fortress against the striking of worries and sorrows. Bless Muhammad and his household, and make my seeking his mediation as an intercessor give profit on the day of resurrection. Surely Thou art the most merciful of the merciful.
The Spotlight.
Israel, the U.S., and a group of seven nations are still going on with their blame game against Iran for a drone attack on an Israeli managed tanker off Oman last week. The UTOP official has also joined the chorus without offering any substantiated evidence. Tel Aviv has even threatened to take military action against Iran. Iran has rejected the allegations as baseless, while at the same time warning Israel against any adventurism. So what's behind this insistence on holding Iran responsible for the attack without offering any evidence?
Iran has once again denied having any link to the recent attack on an Israeli-managed oil tanker off Oman. Iran's deputy permanent representative to the UN, Zahra Ershadi, dismissed the accusations as politically motivated, saying there is no verifiable and conclusive evidence to substantiate the claim. Ershadi also urged the Council to avoid being trapped by the fabrications of the Israeli regime, which as usual are blindly supported by certain Western countries. The Iranian diplomat responded to renewed accusations by the U.S. and its allies during Security Council meeting. During the virtual session, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken even vowed to punish Iran for the alleged attack. Iran has repeatedly rejected the accusations, warning that it will not hesitate to give a crushing response to any threat against its national security. Chief Commander of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, Major General Hossein Salami, also warned Israel not to shorten its life by making a wrong and aggressive move. The Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council said that Iran is carefully monitoring the suspicious moves by the U.S., the U.K., and Israel in the region.
Such moves are made to create chaos and confusion among countries in the Persian Gulf area. Tehran is ready to neutralize any plot to destabilize the region.
Following the ship incident, resistance sources told a media outlet that the attack was in retaliation for a recent deadly Israeli airstrikes on a Syrian airport. But Washington and London have thrown their weight behind Israel in its blame game against Iran while turning a blind eye to Israel's own hostile acts in the region. According to a report by Wall Street Journal, over a dozen of Iranian vessels had fallen victim to the Israeli attacks, some of which openly claimed by the regime. It seems that the West is trying to shift the international attention from Israel's frequent deadly attacks on the Gaza Strip and Syria, as well as its atrocities in the occupied territories. Such a stance will simply embolden Tel Aviv to push ahead with its crimes with impunity. Nonetheless, the ongoing plot against Iran is just exposing the weakness of a regime the U.S. and its Western allies had created in the occupied Palestine. The attack on an Israeli managed ship and Israel's defeat in its war on Gaza at the hands of resistance groups spotlight the regime's weakness. This also shows the era of hit and run for Israel has come to an end.
Okay, that was Matthew Fetterman reporting. Welcome to the Spotlight. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Allow me to introduce the panelists that are joining me in this edition of the Spotlight. We'll have activist and political commentator Leif Meharouf from Beirut. Also, journalist and political analyst Elijah Magner joining us from Brussels. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. Let me start with Beirut. Leith, what's behind this persistent blame game launched against Iran? I mean, how can one hold another responsible for an act in the absence of any solid evidence?
Well, because the United States as an empire and apartheid Israel as a supremacist entity, both of them believe that they don't have to apply to international law and that they can live with this creation of theirs that they call Western-based order or rule-based order. So it is they have the right to attack the shipping lanes and containers and ships of others. They have that the right to attack sovereign territories of Syria, Iraq, Lebanon, Palestine, and nobody else has the right to retaliate. This is as simple as it is. The United States and with it apartheid Israel have decided that the international law doesn't apply to them, and they want to apply their rule over others. And this is where the crux of the issue of resistance in Western Asia, in Iran, in Syria, in Iraq, in Lebanon, in Yemen, is all about sovereignty and self-determination and continuing the struggle of decolonization that hasn't yet come to full fruition since the end of World War I and World War II.
Now turn to Brussels. Elijah, in 1967, Israel, during a war with Egypt, attacked a clearly marked U.S. Navy ship, the USS Liberty. It killed 34 crew members. The aim was to drag the U.S. into war with Egypt. Now, is Tel Aviv doing the same thing here again, trying to drag Washington into a war with Tehran?
Well, I don't think it's the same scenario today, because neither Israel nor the U.S. or the U.S. allies are willing to confront Iran in an open war. What they're trying to do is to try to convince as many countries as possible to condemn Iran at the United Nations. Unfortunately, the world is not seeing and is not concentrating on the repetitive attacks that the Israelis have carried on against civilian ships and oil tankers in the open sea. Mm-hmm. It is something that the Israelis have recognized, acknowledged, and after that, the Americans and the Israelis are just trying to put pressure on Iran to bring it back to the nuclear table for the negotiation on a nuclear agreement that Iran is not willing to do unless the U.S. comply with its commitment signed in 2015. I don't think the aim is to carry on an attack or to try to confront or wage attack on Iran. I think is to mount the pressure and to increase different kind of pressure on Iran to force it to another agenda, particularly when Sayed Ibrahim Raisi is now in power and is not showing and sending many indications that he's not going to be flexible on the matter of Iranian national security.
Uh-huh. Okay, Laith, Iran's Supreme National Security Council says that it's closely watching all suspicious moves by the U.S., U.K., and Israel in this region and is ready to neutralize any destabilizing plot. So my question is almost in the same in the line I ask Elijah. Why is this happening at this juncture of time?
Well, look, there is two realities at play here. One of them is the fact that there is no return to the nuclear deal because the United States and apartheid Israel want to add the discussion of Iran's ballistic missiles and the alliance assets in Western Asia. And those are things that Iran is not willing to negotiate. And the new president was elected through the voters wanting an end to the Rouhani scam that happened of just wasting all these years on this agreement. And given the fact that the United States even didn't deliver on that original Iran nuclear deal, because it claimed that it didn't pass it in the Congress or Senate, it's clear that nothing that the United States signs, even if it signs it through a Security Council resolution, is to be trusted, because there's no way any deal, no matter how much Iran gives to the United States and apartheid Israel, will be passed through the Congress and the Senate. The political bodies in the United States want to destroy Iran and the resistance in the region. Fortunate to Iran and to the resistance, that's the reality they cannot achieve. And that's where the conflict comes in the behavior of the United States. It is hitting left and right like a cat that is cornered. That's the empire knows its end is coming and is acting up really destructive ways to its own self.
Okay, Elijah, Israel has attacked multiple Iranian ships in the past couple of years in broad daylight and got away with it. I mean, why didn't European and American leaders hold Israel responsible for those violations?
First of all, we cannot count on Europe because Europe is just aligned itself behind the U.S. for whatever U.S. wants. Secondly, the international community has double standards, and the problem is the world listened to them, and I don't think Iran should listen to them, because everything they've been saying, it doesn't make any sense, is against the international law. They are in clear violation of international laws, and they can't see what the Israelis are doing, including not only the attacks on oil tankers and other vessels, but the assassination of nuclear scientists and other destructive and sabotage attack in Iran. And that is a clear violation of international laws. Therefore, the only conclusion we can come out with is something that has been going on for many years now. The international law doesn't matter. It is only applied when the U.S. and its allies want it to apply on a particular country that is refusing the U.S. hegemony and is seeking the withdrawal of the U.S. forces from West Asia. So the double standard is nothing new. The world is no longer a fool, but we see that the European diplomat and politician have no courage to stand against the Americans and can no longer even honor their commitment. And we saw that in 2018 when President Donald Trump shredded the nuclear deal and Europe was not able to stand by its commitment. Therefore, it is not surprising to see the U.S. and Europe standing behind Israel for whatever Israel is doing. If we look also not only the attacks against Iran, but the violation against Lebanon, the thousand attacks against Syria, and the continuous killing in Gaza of the Palestinians, all these crime, international crime, and a violation of international laws is something that Israel has been carrying on since many decades under the watchful eyes and impotent eyes of the international community.
Now, Leith, do you share the same view as Elijah in that matter?
Well, clearly, the experience that the world has since the end of World War II is that all these European countries are just vessels. They are occupied directly by American forces, and the struggle has been since that day to bring sovereignty to decolonizing nations in Asia and Africa and Latin America. Mm-hmm. And that has been the crux of the human struggle. And the only way that any nation received those sovereign rights of self-determination is through fighting it and defeating the colonizer. The Americans just, apartheid Israel acts as a beachhead war colony that extends the imperial order in the region, and they will fight to keep maintain that. One thing that is important to note is that just a few hours, some of the Iranian officials said that they are tracking an Israeli submarine escorted by two warships that are crossing towards the Red Sea, probably on their way to the Gulf. So no matter how much any logical being would understand that in a conflict that between Iran or with it, the resistance axis versus the United States and Israel, there'll be hundreds of thousands of losses of American soldiers and Israeli soldiers within minutes because of the direct missiles that will hit all the American bases in West Asia. That's the logical, anybody with a little bit brain can understand that. Mm-hmm. So watching how the United States and apartheid Israel are acting, it shows you acts of desperation. They really are probably just trying to bluff. I hope for that, because no war is good for anybody.
Okay. Now, Elijah, in response to that unfounded allegation against Iran attacking that Israeli managed ship off Oman, Tehran has made it clear that breach of security in the Persian Gulf waters is a red line. And Israel says it's ready to attack Iran. They publicized it recently that we are ready to attack Iran. Iran says we are ready if you dare do so. How likely is Tel Aviv to take military action against Iran?
I think it's extremely unlikely. I do not exclude the intelligence attacks, which means the sabotage and attack on ships or attack in different theater, because today all theaters, starting from Gaza, Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Yemen, and Iran, are all joined, and Israel can attack in any of these theaters. And I think Iran can do the same because it has strong allies and it has a strong presence. I don't think Israel dares to attack overtly Iran. Iran has the capability to defend itself. It shows the type of missiles Iran has managed to construct and the type of capability and advanced technology that it has reached, and it can reach Israel if Israel dares to attack Iran. I totally exclude a direct attack. I think the kind of tit for tat can continue, and I don't think Iran should just turn the other cheek to the Israelis when the Israelis try to do something, because as President Ibrahim Raisi told President Macron during the conversation yesterday, that Iran is determined to impose the strategy of deterrence. And by responding to any Israeli or American attack against Iran, this is how Iran is committed to impose strategic deterrence and prevent any attack against its territory or against its interests.
Okay, Leif, how do you look at this? What's the possibility of Israel attacking Iran militarily?
If they are logical, they will not be attacking. If they have any sense in their mind that they will not be attacking, because it's clear the damage and weapons that are on each side, what will happen. We've seen already an example of just a small group like Hamas and Islamic Jihad facing off with apartheid Israel 2 months ago, the damage that that group caused to the supposed mighty Israeli forces. We saw a few days ago Hezbollah responding immediately to an attack by apartheid Israel on Lebanese territory. So it's very clear that the damage that will come from Iran, a nation of 90-plus million people, industrialized with advanced weapons, specifically missiles and drones, will exact a heavy price on the Israelis. So my only worry is that the Zionists and the imperialists have lost their mind. We've seen their society deteriorate. We've seen the outcomes of the elections of Trump and now Biden. It's an empire in decay, where it's like a chicken with its head cut off and it's flailing. So we don't know what crazy decisions they may take, and that's what everybody needs to be watching out for.
Okay. Now, Elijah, the Group of Seven says that Iran's behavior threatens international peace and security. It's Iran that proposed the Hormuz Peace Initiative, and talks with Persian Gulf littoral states to address any concerns if they have. And it's Iran that, as you know, helped Iraq get rid of Daesh terrorists and many more such instances. So who's a threat to regional security?
The only threat to the regional security I see is the presence of the U.S. forces in the Middle East and West Asia. We saw how Iran managed to agree on three meetings with Saudi Arabia in Iraq. We saw how the possibility between the countries of the Middle East can unite and can talk about their problems and try to sort out their problems without the U.S. intervention. And I think the U.S. is occupying Afghanistan, and after 20 years, it is forced to pull out, is occupying Iraq, and now it is forced to start thinking about pulling out its forces. It is still occupying Syria. That is creating a real havoc in the Middle East. Why on earth the Americans are still in Syria? As Donald Trump said rightly, he's stealing the oil. That is destabilizing Syria as a sovereign country and stealing its wealth and preventing the economy and the country from recovering. This is destabilizing the country. What the U.S. is doing in Lebanon is exactly the same. What the U.S. is doing in Iraq is preventing Iraq from having contract with Siemens, a German company, to mount the attack on the government from the population, and so people are unhappy. So all that is created by the Americans. The Iranians have supported Syria according to the request of the Syrian government, is willing to support Lebanon with oil and gas if the government is willing to take it. It is supporting Iraq with electricity. It is supporting Yemen, the small and poorest country in the Middle East, facing a huge war machine from the Saudis, supported by the U.S. and its allies against the poor Yemeni people. That is destabilizing the region. And what they are doing is they continue their war. They haven't stopped. They continue bombing in Afghanistan. They continue occupying Syria. They continue presence in Iraq despite the decision of the Iraqi government asking them to pull out, and they continue destabilizing Lebanon by impoverishing the country and putting pressure on the economy and preventing the government from dealing with Russia or China or looking west and east. So right. All these are destabilizing factors that the Americans are responsible of in West Asia.
Okay. Leith, G7 ministers are also calling for the vessels in this region to be able to navigate freely and in accordance with international law. That's exactly what Iran has been for. Iran has even gone the extra mile, taken out to, you know, further waters off its borders and protecting other vessels from different nationalities against pirate attacks. Let's have your comments in 1 minute, please.
Well, it's very clear that the United States and apartheid Israel are highway bandits, are pirates. We've seen how they had attacked Iranian vessels bringing oil and products to Venezuela. We've seen Britain attempt to do that too because it felt that it can bring it paydays back. We've seen apartheid Israel do that to attack ships coming to Syria and to Lebanon. We've seen what the Saudis have been doing, attacking ships coming to Yemen. And so we know clearly who are the pirates, who are the highway bandits, who are the lawless states, and that is the United States and apartheid Israel. And the struggle right now that Iran is at the crux of with this resistance axis will hopefully change the face of Western Asia to the better.
Okay, on that note, we'll come to the end of this edition of The Spotlight. Thanking my guest, activist and political commentator Leith Mehroub from Beirut, and journalist and political analyst Elijah Magnier from Brussels. Dubbing your host, Behrouz Najafin.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Limelight. As more and more human rights organizations and legal experts reflect the harsh reality of human impact of Zionist regime's bombing campaigns, the image which the Israeli regime has sought to cultivate of itself has eroded and been seriously damaged, perhaps beyond repair. We're prepared for you an article written by Richard Sedan, a journalist, writer, and television reporter. The piece is titled Disconnect Between Media and Huge Grassroots Protests for Palestine. A huge groundswell in support for the Palestinians has been visible globally, with cities across the world hosting mass protests and demonstrations in solidarity with the Palestinian people and the horrific conditions as a result of Israelis' latest bombardment of the besieged Gaza Strip. The deadliest result of the Israeli regime's assault on the Palestinians caused widespread outrage among millions around the world, who are ever more acutely aware of how the occupation of Palestine breaks international laws, violates United Nations resolutions, and simply contradicts the notion that the Zionist regime is somehow a free and fair entity operating as a democracy. As more and more human rights organizations and legal experts reflect the harsh reality of the human impact of the Israeli regime's bombing campaigns, the image which the Israeli regime has sought to cultivate of itself has eroded and been seriously damaged, perhaps beyond repair. The power of ordinary people reflecting their stories from Gaza, their plight being shared over social media, at times censored, but with countless people and organizations breaking the censorship by spreading information, led to an outpouring of outrage at the Israeli regime's actions and sympathy for the Palestinians from all corners of the world, as well as direct actions by ordinary people targeting factories which manufacture Israeli arms and forming protests on the premises of such locations. The reality of the impact of Israel's bombing of Gaza led to a huge demonstrations, some of them organized in a matter of hours, attracting colossal numbers of participants. London, England in particular, saw an unprecedented number of people hit the streets recently, demanding an end to the illegal occupation of Palestine, amassing at different locations in the British capital, including at the BBC, and also at the Israeli embassy and elsewhere, voicing their discontent at the ongoing murder of innocent Palestinian civilians. And arguably, London witnessed perhaps the largest pro-Palestinian rally in living memory, possibly of all time. Indeed, hundreds of thousands of people rallied, with estimates ranging as to the number of people in attendance. What's interesting, though, is how this has apparently been played down by large media platforms. By most accounts, and as evidenced by those recording the protests and taking pictures, is that the number of people packing the streets of London seems to have been much larger than has been made out. While it's true that some outlets have indeed suggested that more than 100,000 people marched at the most recent protests, just before the Palestinian resistance celebrated victory, this number, according to those who actually attended, seems the most conservative estimate possible. Some have hinted that close to 500,000 people gathered for the Palestinians in London. Others have argued that it was closer to 200,000 to 300,000. But whatever the number, it's clear that the mainstream media has likely not done justice to the true scale of the support for the Palestinians at the largest of the recent marches. And one might have thought that even taking the lowest estimate of supporters as the true number of protesters, the media might have done more to highlight the significance of such numbers. After all, if Britain is a democracy, surely celebrating a huge number of protesters hitting the streets, exercising a fundamental right of democracy, protesting, might be more newsworthy than the few news outlets we did see provide some measure of coverage. But this does not seem to be the case, as the disconnect between the political class, the ordinary people's support of Palestine grows larger. Like those that remain committed to upholding the status quo, the mainstream media seems to be doing all it can to downplay just how many millions of people across Britain are standing shoulder to shoulder with the Palestinians. In much the same way as many prominent figures are vilified for voicing solidarity with the Palestinians, when ordinary people use their strength in numbers to also show support and to exercise the simple act of protesting for the Palestinians, many sections of the media seem unwilling or unable to reflect the truth of how perceptions of Israel are changing, and changing fast. We've also seen some journalists pay the price recently for daring to tell the truth about Palestine. This is a sign that the tide is turning. It is irreversible. The situation in Palestine simply cannot continue, and the Israeli regime must be held accountable for its criminal actions and can no longer hide behind the excuse of defending itself. While hundreds of thousands recently hit the streets in Britain marching for Palestine, despite the fact that the media downplayed the reality of the events, millions of people were still able to see the truth about the huge levels of support that exist in this country for Palestine. It is now simply undeniable. Meanwhile, another huge protest rally in Washington, D.C. condemned latest Israeli atrocities against Palestinians as hawkish U.S. lawmakers reintroduced the bill supporting the occupying regime. More than 100 pro-Palestinian groups across the United States have sponsored another major protest rally in Washington, D.C. against the Israeli regime's latest terror campaign against the Palestinians. The massive protest march on Saturday, 29th of May, sponsored by Islamic, Palestinian, Arab and human rights groups within the United States, began at the Lincoln Memorial Monument near the State Department and concluded near the U.S. Congress, which has been blocked off by fences and barbed wire since the violent 6th of January attack on the legislative compound by pro-Trump supporters. The recent anti-Israel rally came days after the latest Israeli onslaught against the Palestinian population in the besieged Gaza Strip and other occupied territories concluded with a ceasefire, and followed numerous similar protests held across the United States and other parts of the globe condemning repeated atrocities of the U.S.-sponsored Israeli regime. The rally, dubbed National March for Palestine, also coincides with mounting international pressure against persisting Israeli attacks against Palestinian civilians, particularly Palestinian children, also attacks on hospitals, homes, schools, and libraries. Osama Jamal of the United States Council of Muslim Organizations, one of the sponsors of the protest event, said, "We are calling our community and all peace-loving people to march in Washington, D.C. to send a message that the American people are no longer complicit in war crimes being carried out by the Israeli regime." A growing cadre of organizers led by Muslim and progressive organizations are uniting in this historic National March for Palestine. At the heels of United Nations Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet comments on Thursday, 27th of May, that she has seen no evidence that civilian buildings in the Gaza Strip hit by Israeli airstrikes were being used for military purposes. Mohsen Ansari, president of the Islamic Circle of North America, added, "In the past 3 weeks, people from across the world have shown unprecedented solidarity and support for the rights of the Palestinian people. This unwavering support from just individuals across the globe has sent a clear message to the Israeli regime and the United States that the atrocities and the killing of innocent civilians, including children, is absolutely unacceptable." Nihad Awad of Council of American Islamic Relations, CARE, another sponsor of the rally, said, "We are seeing increasing progress in raising awareness for Congress to better support solutions to protect the legal and human rights of Palestinians." Nihal Awad added, "At the same time, we have witnessed the continued reluctance in the Biden administration to hold Israel accountable for its war crimes in the Gaza Strip or uphold American values by demanding an end to evictions of Palestinians in the city of Al-Quds." The protest march is part of a new national Sanction Israel campaign calling on pro-Israel Biden administration and Congress to sanction the Israeli regime and stop giving it billions of U.S. tax dollars and military hardware, like the very same bombs that the hawkish regime just used to obliterate entire Palestinian families in the Gaza Strip. This is why Republican Senator Marco Rubio of Florida, along with 15 other fellow right-wing lawmakers, reintroduced legislation on Friday, 28th of May, that would impose sanctions on individuals and entities that support the Gaza-based Hamas resistance group or other Palestinian organizations. A press release issued by Marco Rubio's office proclaimed on Friday, "This bill would impose sanctions against foreign individuals, entities, and governments that provide support to Hamas, the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement, and other Palestinian groups." The bill, titled the Palestinian International Terrorism Support Prevention Act, also requires the U.S. president to submit an assessment to Congress regarding whether other countries are doing enough to counter the fundraising, financing, money laundering, and other forms of support for Palestinian groups. Marco Rubio, the Vice Chairman of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence and Ranking Member of the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations, led the bill's reintroduction, citing the need to uphold supporters of such organizations accountable following the encounter between Israeli regime forces and Palestinian resistance groups that led to the massacre of more than 270 Palestinians in the Gaza Strip and the city of Al-Quds, including many Palestinian women and children.
With you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.